This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com. The only place to be in your pop culture world.
Come on, Lewis. Come on. We call it the place to be.
The place to be. Yes, it's the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
It is contagious. It is the place to be. And we are live each and every Monday.
To do worse than Josh Richter.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Just Rosero, coming to you live here on this Thursday evening inside the PTBN studios. And I am pretty fired up, Scott Criscola. How are you?
I'm well, JR. Good evening. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 483 of the longest running episodic fucking Madison Square Garden goddamn fucking podcast. Please be, that's because you're pumped up, my friend. Because it is quarter day at the Garden. We're not at the Garden tonight, actually, which... because there's basketball going on. No. Of course, yes, today is the quarterfinals of the Big East tournament, and our Providence Friars have advanced to Friday evening, sir.
When did it become our Providence Friars? You and everyone else, you're all on the bandwagon. I mean, I appreciate it, but...
You know what the biggest bandwagon in the world is? The Yankees. If you grow up and decide, I'm a Yankee fan, you're on a bandwagon. It's just the way it is. There's bandwagons everywhere. And I actually went to PC Games while you were in grammar school, so...
I don't know if you should be
1911.
All right.
Dave Gavitt was in seventh grade.
So listen, I'm also fired up because I had another customer service running tonight. Before we get to that, why don't we bring in our third man in the booth here tonight? Normally for Science Made Events, our plan is to have Mr. Peter Winston in the house. He's actually at a Bruins game, so he had to step aside.
Yes.
In his place is the PTBN historian, the king of, I don't know. I'd call him the king of PlaceMation.com, but Brad will punch a hole in the wall. So he's the jester of PlaceMation.com, Chad Campbell. Chadley, Soup, how are you?
Soup.
Soup.
Good callback. I think Providence tomorrow, though, is going to hit a shock wall.
I don't know if
you're
Kevin Ali's not walking through that door.
Kevin Ali.
Kevin Ali is a motivator.
Kevin Ailey. He's lucky.
There's something he'll be working. Special about those UConn Huskies.
He'll be doing the March Madness preview with Reish because he's going to have time to do it. So in the next couple of days. Oh, God. He lost SMU today. It's terrible. Brad should be happy. We can call Chad whatever he wants. Brad should be happy. His stupid team's winning right now. So
yeah.
Yeah. Whatever. And then Butler and Seton Hall to end the evening. So, JR, Delta, Vizio.
CVS,
I mean, Vizio to me is like the crown jewel.
CVS Caremark. So I called my local pharmacy to reorder my inhaler that I have. And I do one puff of this daily due to my issues with allergies. And I mean, I don't need it to live, but I breathe better. I live better when I have it. And so I call the reorder as normal. And the girl at CVS is very nice. She's delightful. And she just says, oh, I'm having a problem with the computer. I'm going to call your insurance and we'll get it straightened out. So Caremark like underwent like all these, they keep blaming my company with the way the plan is set up, but they underwent like a bunch of plan changes. So they're trying to force everyone into like 90-day prescriptions, which is fine. I get it. I guess they feel it's cheaper for whatever reason. They give you a break if you do the 3 month. I don't really know the logic behind it. So they call Caremark on my behalf and then they call back. And she's like, all right, we called, but you're only permitted to get, you can't get more than two in a 75-day period. And because you have to get three and you've already gotten two, they can't let you do it. So I'm trying to follow the logic here. And they're like, you can't get a 3 month supply now because you can't get more than two in a 75-day period. But you can only get a 3 month supply. You can't get another 1 month supply. So it made no sense. So she's like, we have to fax a doctor and get prior authorization, blah, blah. So I'm like, all right, go ahead. And then I hang up and I'm thinking about it. And I'm already aggravated with Caremark because they've stopped covering one of my medicines that I need. And so I call. And, I mean, I admittedly was not, like, the nicest person in the world because I was already fired up. And I'm just asking this lady for the explanation. I'm like, simply tell me how this makes any – like, do you guys feel like that makes any sense at all? Like, I feel like they're putting constrictions around you by themselves that make no sense. They're like, you can't get three within 75 days, but you have to get three at a time. Like, that makes no sense to me, right? Am I wrong?
Well, yeah, they're telling you on one hand you need three, and the other hand you can't have three.
Right. Exactly.
It's like a space-time continuum thing.
Chad, does that sound right to you, Chad? That's fucked up?
I'm not good with math. So.
Okay. Not at all.
Yeah.
So I call, and this lady is like, all she keeps telling me is, she goes, well, that's the way the plan works. That's how your company set it up. And I'm like, you're telling me that my company that has nothing to do with pharmaceuticals put in place, forcing me to get 3 months worth, but also understanding this very particular inhaler can't have more than 3 in 75 days. I'm like, you're telling me that they put those, not you, the pharmaceutical company that would know this stuff. My company, not in pharmaceuticals, would sit there and do this. And she just kept saying, that's the way the plan is. So finally I said, like I always do, get me to a supervisor. And she just didn't even say anything and it hung up on me. So now I'm fucking livid, right? I mean, like I was in frontline phones. Like you don't hang up. Like that's the last thing you do is hang up. So I call back and I get this guy, Lawrence, who I right away say, give me a supervisor. And he's like, well, tell me why. So I said, well, I was on the phone and I'm, you know, and this lady hung up on me. I just want to talk to the supervisor. And here's where he broke me. And I appreciate his honesty. He goes, sir, tell me what happened so I don't sound like an idiot when I talk to my supervisor. So I'm like, all right, Lawrence, we're speaking the same language. You're being blunt. I'm being blunt. So I explained to him. And right away, Lawrence gives me the explanation. He goes, oh, that happened because they made the switch over, and there is a way to override it by us here. We have to talk to the supervisor, and they can put a manual override to get you on the three-month track. Scott, Chad, that's all I was looking for, right? A simple answer from the company that puts these parameters in place. They got me to a supervisor. They called CVS immediately, and guess what? My prescription is going to be ready tomorrow, a three-month supply. So I'm not thrilled that they did it, but at least I got someone that understood. That first lady, how was she employed? Like, she basically is just telling me, like, no, you're an idiot. Like, this is how it is. Your plan. Go call your company. Like not even trying to help me. Like, isn't that ridiculous? And the idea behind it is ridiculous, too. Like what kind of stupidity is that? Like, and I said, why did you let me get 2 single months if you knew it was going to fuck me going forward? Like, it made no sense. It was stupid. It was as stupid as it gets. Fuck Caremark.
Didn't they buy Walgreens?
I don't know.
Or is Caremark not CVS? Caremark owns CVS?
I know.
They're
Caremark
like
is
in
CVS.
Partnership.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Didn't they buy Walgreens? Aren't they like scooping, or they buy Rite Aid? Didn't they buy another chain?
I know Walgreens has like their own little thing too. I can't.
Yeah, I usually go to Walgreens, but I thought they bought Rite Aid or something. Anyway, no, I not quite Vizio level, but top 10 stupidity. Top 10 stupidity.
Well, let me share my medical.
So anyway,
story
let's here. Talk about sinus. No, all right, gotcha. Yeah.
So you know, we had our second child about a year ago now, and it's been about, I guess, about 3 months ago. We got, you know, everything goes through, and I assume this is the way it is everywhere. But you know, like when the baby is born, while they're in the hospital until they go home, the charges and stuff are with the mom, like with her insurance.
Right.
Then you have to get the separate insurance for the baby, so forth. Now, with our first kid, he had to be in NICU. So once it went to NICU, they actually discharged, you know, or didn't discharge him, but he had to be admitted into NICU, so therefore it transferred to him, so forth. Our second baby, Carson, he did not go to NICU or nothing. We went home in 2 days. So 3 months ago, we got a bill from the doctor that was that the like in-house hospital pediatrician that was directed towards him. We got a bill for like $900, and they said they saw him 3 times. So we were like, well, wait a minute now. He didn't go to NICU. He should have been under Jennifer's insurance, and all that was covered. So what's the holdup? And it's like they will not – the office that he works for will not rebill to Jennifer's insurance. Like they won't bill it again to our insurance. which makes no sense to me. And we've had a lot of correspondence where, like, our insurance is Blue Cross Blue Shield. Like, we've had them call the pediatrician's billing financial office and say, yeah, if you bill it, we'll still say it's a timely filing and we'll process the claim and stuff like that. And they simply will not bill the claim. And now they're threatened for us to go to collection still, even though they won't bill it. Because we're not paying it because we're like, he wasn't in NICU. We haven't seen any proof that they saw him, period, even without NICU. So it's been a disaster, and we, like, may actually have to go into litigation because they're not backing down at all.
Ridiculous. It's ridiculous. They just make up their own fucking rules.
It's been insane. It's been insane. Like, we had a two-hour conversation, and the rep from Blue Cross Blue Shield said, ma'am, we talked to the hospital. They have no admittance of him in NICU. He was still on her insurance, so that's why your claim was denied, because he didn't have his separate policy number and all that. So, I mean, when they filed it the first time through him, you know, that he didn't exist, according to them, at that point in time. So it was an irrelevant charge. It should have went through Jennifer, and they still won't refile the claim. Why? I don't know. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. But yeah, it's been fun. It's been a complete ordeal. And now it's like, I'm having to do all this research, because really, like, they're at the privy where they can kind of send us to collections either way.
Right.
You know, like, they have the power just to send us to collections. And it's like, I don't know. There's got to be better checks and balances for that.
No, they don't give
because
a shit.
Now,
they don't care.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, now we got to look at whether, like, litigations were. I mean, it's insane. Like, I mean, because I'm not paying, whatever, $900, certainly not. So.
No, fuck that.
So, yeah.
No, they're passing it off.
It's been fun. Well, I don't even know why they won't reclaim it. Like, it's a valid
claim. They're going to get paid either way, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to get paid. Like, they will refuse to file the claim under Jennifer's name or her policy. It's nuts. But,
so they're going to get the money either way. They just want it from you directly rather than from the insurance company.
I don't understand what.
Like, what do they give a crap?
Like, I don't know what their motive is. And finally, I've kind of lost it with the girl last time. And I was like, just because, you know, like, you don't know how to do your damn job, like, why are you taking it out on us? So it's probably the most, like, frustrated I've been with a customer service. I still think, like, DirecTV, Dish Network, stuff like that, when you switch, like, that's probably top of the line, but this is up there too. It's insane.
Well, because at the end of the day, with those people, like, what are they going to do? Like, with something like this, is they're going to keep they're going to get
like they've already called collections. Like, this is how this all came to fruition, because we got a letter from, like, the collection agency that was like, you're about to be sent, you know, off or whatever. We've been informed, and that kind of got the ball rolling through all this. So it's been a mess.
Yeah, it's awful. They make up their own fucking rules. There's no oversight all around it. They don't care. There's, like, nowhere to go. There's just nowhere to go. Like, they don't care.
No.
They just keep blaming. I mean, it's just a circle of blame. They don't care.
Yeah, it's like, who do we call? Like, the Department of Community Health? Like, I don't even know what the fuck the Department of Community Health
news.
Is.
Call the news. That's it. You're going to call the news. I mean, that's what I did when I had my issues with Sally Mae back in the day, when they would double charge me for a month of loans. I went to the fucking, like, Channel 6 investigation team, and I was on the news. They refunded my money.
Special report. Yeah. So. You can do that. Yeah. We're looking into, I mean, it's stupid.
Well, those channels too, like, those networks are looking for, like, that kind of shit. Like, for those.
Oh yeah.
Like, they'll love it. Like, they'll eat it up if you call it. They'll be all over it. They'll come out the next day.
Trust me, from being on the school board, we had the news called. I was on the other side of that, putting out some of
stock footage of you playing with your kids in the backyard, make you look like a
stock footage of him watching fucking Marafuji or whatever with the shit rolling on the ground.
Shibata.
Like, this neglectful father is now trying to get out of his hospital bill.
Ian Rotten. IWA himself would probably be.
Oh God!
Soup Campbell. Oh, right. As he's known as.
Oh God!
All right. What are we on? What do we got?
Feel better, guys.
All right. Yeah, we're good.
Special edition of Dadcast.
Yeah, there you go. Just going to repurpose that opening segment.
There you go. Use it as a shorty, a pod blast. All right. There is no customer service issues in the World Wrestling Federation. Maybe now there is, but I don't know about it, 1987. But this evening, gentlemen, for the final time of the calendar year, we are on national television for the final episode of 1987 of Saturday Night's Main Event. The air date is Saturday night, November 28th, 1987. It was shot on the 11th, so it's about 3 weeks old. And from the Seattle Center Coliseum in Seattle, Washington. Kind of odd, Chad, right? Even late 80s going out there for WWF, right? Mm. Little
yeah,
different for them.
Yeah, it felt like a different kind of vibe venue for them, sure.
Highly caffeinated.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, there's some sweetening going Starbucks on.
Seattle's best, only there, though. Now, of course, this is unprecedented because obviously we tell you where they were actually that night, the rosters. Scheduled for the first time in the history of our refresh, there were not one, not two, five shows that day.
Jesus Christ.
That's crazy.
Now, one of them was canceled. It was at the Memorial Auditorium in Utica. Maybe it was bad weather because it was November. And one of them was a doubleheader or a twofer in one place. Paul Orndorff was at both. The Von Braun Civic Center in Huntsville, Alabama, which would obviously be a big WCW stronghold later on in the 90s. And or I guess in the late 80s too, I suppose, Chad. And the Jefferson Civic Center in Birmingham, Alabama. How far are they apart, Chad? Do you know?
Yeah, like an hour and a half or so. Oh, yeah, so easy to do a matinee and a night gap.
So that's what they did there.
I believe it's pronounced Birmingham.
It's not Birmingham. We're not in England. It's Birmingham. Birmingham, it would be England. That's what I'm assuming. There was a show at the Cops Coliseum in Hamilton, Ontario. And you know, JR, we're going to be going to Cops Coliseum. Mm. Very soon. Why? You'll see. Anyway, the only match that Graham has is Brutus Beefcake versus Greg Valentine. Hmm. And they did have a show. And I don't know. I guess this isn't that far apart. Yeah, it must not be because these two guys were here too. The Forum in Montreal, home of the Mr. Plyers Canadiens. So, yeah. So, here's the card for that show. Lanny Poffo defeated Steve Lombardi. Greg Valentine defeated Outback Jack. Danny Spivey defeated Jerry Allen. Danny Spivey was still there. Don Morocco defeated Butch Reed. Bam Bam Bigelow defeated King Kong Bundy, who was subbing for Killer Khan. The Rougeau brothers defeated Nikolai Volkoff and Boris Zhukov. Of course, the Bolsheviks. Dino Bravo defeated Brutus Beefcake. One half of Strike Force, Tito Santana, defeated Tama. And in the main event, Hulk Hogan successfully defended his World Wrestling Federation Championship against the One Man Gang.
Fuck you, so. Poirier.
Fuck you, Poirier. So there's your show. So five shows were scheduled. One in Utica was canceled. And obviously, as Chad said, the doubleheader in Alabama was not that bad. So, and I mean, Hamilton in Montreal is – how far? I have to ask – maybe next time we have Aaron George or maybe next time we have Kelly on. How
maybe
far
you,
that is?
You can
is.
Just look it up, you know.
You could, but we –
You don't have to wait till you talk to a Canadian to figure it out.
It's easier than having to dig fucking shit up.
What you think you should do?
Kelly's on the next show.
Now, what would Kelly know the distance from Hamilton to Montreal? That's like me. All right, what's the distance from Louisville to Reno?
You would know. You travel around there. That was a dumb example.
It's not dumb. I'm asking you. Like, you're just picking two random cities and assuming because they're Canadian, they'll know.
I mean, Montreal's a big distance from Calgary and Vancouver.
Hmm. Yeah, Hamilton, I mean, not too well. Ontario's Toronto. That's probably a few hours.
Driving?
5 hours and 55 minutes.
There you go. See?
There's your answer.
South. Now you don't have to talk to Aaron. Probably that's nice.
And probably 30 hours from where Kelly lives.
Sorry. All right.
By the way, so this is also the end of a busy week, too, because this is our third show from this one single week in 1987. Yeah.
Yes. We had a house show Tuesday. We had Survivor Series Thursday. And we have we have this here. So busy week for the World Wrestling Federation on this Thanksgiving holiday weekend. Any other notes, JR?
Maybe. Earlier on this day on Superstars of Wrestling, Ted DiBiase, the Million Dollar Man, announced intentions, Scott. And those intentions were to buy the WWF World Heavyweight title. And this was during an interview with Craig DeGeorge. So we'll see if that goes anywhere. Also earlier on the day on Superstars, Jesse Ventura interviewed Greg Valentine backstage prior to his match. And he announced that Jimmy Hart would be his manager once again now that he's a solo act, done with the Dream Team. About time. I remember we watched it. It's on one of the primetimes, too, from that week or that month or so. I remember watching that. He's in the blue tights in the back in the locker room, and Jimmy Hart jumps out of the locker room and giddy about their reuniting. All right. Here we are, back on NBC for the final time in 87. We get our promos from Savage, King Kong Bundy, Bobby Heenan, Hulk Hogan. Jesse also returns to Sunday's main event booth now, back from Hollywood. Him and Vince open the show and tee up everything ahead of us. Mean Gene is backstage chatting with George Animal Steele, who has an Elizabeth figure, is ogling it. He says nothing else of substance, of course. Jesse gets caught up with Danny Davis earlier tonight, and they talk about how the animal should have been banned long ago. And that is our opening match. That is George the Animal Steele taking on Danny Davis. The feud actually began back in May at Saturday's Main Event 11 during the Randy Savage George Steele Lumberjack match. I don't know if you remember those matches at all, Scott. I think there was, 15 of them. Davis was one of the Lumberjacks at ringside during the match. While his role is to make sure neither wrestler escaped, Davis took the opportunity to initiate a feud with Steele when he was outside the ring by hitting him with the ring bell. They would feud on the house show circuit on and off throughout the spring and into the fall. With nothing spectacular happening, the match would be blown off to this less than stellar feud here. And in the end of the year award for the Wrestling Observer, this was actually voted worst feud of the year for 1987, which is funny because if it was all pretty much house shows, it's, I don't know, it wasn't really hurting anyone. But rough way to open the show here. Davis doesn't even have Jimmy Hart with him anymore at this point, just pretty much circling the bowl. Danny gets in the ring and argues with Joey Morella. Steele storms out and goes right at Danny, starts biting him, pissing off Jesse. Steele chokes away and Davis bails outside to regroup. Davis sneaks back in and lands a shot, but Steele shrugs him off, unloads a flurry that knocks Danny right back to the floor. Davis keeps coming back in and coming in and out between Steele working him over, including breaking out of a drop toe hold, and that shocks everyone. Steele chases Davis around and grabs a chair, but Joey Morella blocks him from using it. Davis uses a foreign object to jam it into Steele's throat a few times as Jesse gushes over how well he's hiding it from the ref. Steele comes back and hoists Davis up into a hammerlock. Davis kicks the ref on purpose to draw the disqualification. Davis attacks after the bell, but Steele fends him off. This was absolute dog shit. Both guys suck. Boring as well. Just went nowhere and occurred for no reason other than to blow off a few that no one was interested in. Steele really needs to go. He's cooked at this point. Davis should drive him off into the sunset to stay with him. I went with a dud on this one, Scott. Just a nothing match.
Yeah, I gave this a dud too. I'm George Steele out. I think it's finally time that Vince starts to flesh some of this really old gimmicky stuff. Gimmicky stuff's one thing, but this is old.
It's like, you know, that. Like, Steele's old. He can't do anything. And the character is just played out. It's just, we're just dumb.
Yeah, no, it is. There's no doubt. I thought it was funny when Jesse was like, that's the first time I've seen him do a wrestling move in 5 years. It's like, Chad, I have nothing else. Because we have a lot to talk about in the next match. This is just garbage.
Yeah.
I gave it a dud, too.
I went a half a star. Steele,
come on.
Steele's just
You went a half a star on this.
I know.
Let me explain my rubric here, okay?
Fuck you.
So, to me, I give as many five-star matches in a year, usually, as many duds in a year. It's like a bell curve. So, your 99%, you know, is going to be within two standard deviations or rankings of, like, 2.5 stars.
I think we're good at math.
So there's... So there's only going to be like three or four duds in a given year, probably. I don't think this is one of the three or four worst matches of 1987, but it was really bad. I mean, if y'all did quarter stars, it'd probably be a quarter star.
I think it's a dud. It's a big fucking dud.
It's a dud.
There's nothing to it.
Still was really creepy in that interview. That was the biggest takeaway. Like, he's still obsessed with Elizabeth.
Yeah.
As a face. Like, now, I mean, Savage is a face now, so, like, it's even more absurd. Like, how are you supposed to cheer for this guy that will not let this woman go that's clearly grossed out by him? He has her figure. I mean, like, she should literally be getting a restraining order against this guy. I mean, the match is nothing too. And yeah, Davis, Danny Davis feels like one of these characters that they have repeatedly in the WWF that, I mean, he works for a time, but then he overstays his welcome really quick. It's like the James Ellsworth effect, you know, where it's just now it's time to move on to something else.
It's amazing it's amazing how quick he fell off because, I mean, WrestleMania 3, he was like super hot and then a little bit into the spring, but that was it. Like his hottest period was pretty much from when he fucked the Bulldogs early in the year until May and June. And then since then, it pretty much dulled quickly.
Yeah. And even, I mean, we'll get to it in the next match, but I mean, like you said, like Jimmy's not even accompanying him. And they're really pushing like the Hart Foundation as a stable around this time, and they're not even associating like the stable with them, so he's done.
Yeah, I mean and Jimmy's there, so like he's not there, so it's a real slap in the face that he's
Yeah.
All right, well that dud, which we all agreed on, opens the show. We go backstage. Mean Gene is with the Hart Foundation, who are looking to finish off what they started with Macho Man. Jimmy laughs off what happened to Liz at the last Saturday's main event. Gene then talks to Savage and Liz says she has some pain still, but it's fine. Savage is hungrier than ever and out for revenge. I thought Liz was pretty good here, like with the dramatic selling of her beatdown from a month ago. But,
there's
of course,
pain,
we've seen her a bunch of
times. There's pain, but I'm fine.
It's very good. It's actually one of the best delivered lines she ever did.
Until at least she went sexy MILF in WCW. But.
Oh, well, yeah, exactly.
All right. Now is our next match, and that is Randy Savage, the Macho Man, taking on Bret the Hitman Hart. Kind of a dream match. The Harts hit the ring. We get our clips from our last Saturday's Main Event when Liz got shoved down by Honky during the post-match fracas. And I do enjoy with Saturday's Main Event how it almost like exists completely in its own universe. Like it's like nothing else has happened since that show. Like this is it. It's like once a month the WWF exists on NBC.
Right.
And it's good because they actually tell stories from show to show, but it's interesting. So Savage and Liz head down. Macho tells Liz to stay on the floor and not enter the ring. Anvil and Jimmy stalk Liz, and Macho heads out to protect her as Jesse talks about what a distraction she will be. We get an inset promo from the Honky Tonk Man, who says he isn't done with Liz yet. The match starts on the floor with Savage winning the battle and shoving Hart to the post. Back inside, Savage peppers Hart with elbows and works the face, but misses a charge, giving the Hitman control. Bret chokes away and buries a tight elbow drop, but Savage quickly recovers and lands an elbow of his own before shoving Hart off the apron and Hart into the barricade in a great spot. Anvil and Jimmy get on the apron, but Savage ran their heads together. Savage hits the top rope and leaps to the floor, but Hart drills him with a megaphone in the gut on his way down. Anvil lays in some kicks and pitches Savage back as Jesse says Liz shouldn't be out there at all since she can't defend herself. Hart works Savage over, nabbing a near fall at a pile driver. Hart misses a hard charge to the corner, and Savage slings him viciously, shoulder first into the post. He goes up top and hits an axe blow for two, but Hart gets control back with a backbreaker. Hart whiffs on an elbow off the middle rope, which Jesse chastises him attempting. Savage then snaps Hart across the top rope for two, but Hart ducks a charge and sends Macho up and over hard to the floor with a backdrop. Savage grabs his ankle and rides in pain as Anvil celebrates the bump. After the break, Savage has his boot off, and he finally climbs back inside, somehow having not been counted out, despite seemingly being out there for like two and a half minutes. Vince wonders if this is a smart move, as Savage is really in pain. Bret goes right at the ankle, punching and stomping on it before driving his knee into the bone. Hart tweaks the ankle with a spinning toe hold, but Savage kicks free, launching Bret shoulder first to the post again and getting a near fall. Bret comes back with a half crab, but Savage forces the break. Bret goes for a slam, but Savage reverses it to an inside cradle to steal the win. The Harts try to attack after the bell, but Savage evades them and remains unscathed. This was a lot of fun. I think one of the best Saturday's Main Event matches we've seen in a year to the show. We saw Savage versus Jake, which is probably the other real best one. We'd love to see it again with more time at a pay-per-view setting. Bret went step for step with Savage, showing off his skills on a major national audience. And Savage continues to build cred as a face. I thought his selling in this match was amazing. Just a damn strong match. 3.5 stars, Chad.
I went 3.5 as well. This is a pairing you don't see very often at all. The only other singles match I could think of was the Japan match they have in 94. And I think I like this match better than that one as well. I liked Savage's robe tonight. I thought the purple and orange combo looked really good. And just, I mean, everything, the way this match was worked, I thought it did a really strong job. And One getting over the Hart Foundation as a stable, which I don't feel like they were as strongly like identifiable as a stable beyond this point. Like this is the peak of them because you had like the little honky tonk man insert promo where he was still being a creep to Liz, and then Anvil and Jimmy on the outside were very entertaining. And then the match itself, I think individually gave Brett a lot of credibility and, you know, taking advantage of mistakes that Savage presented him and really going after the ankle and the leg. So it did a good job overall with that match, and the finish was fun with the boot being removed and Savage kind of having to get a resourceful inside cradle to gain the pin. Almost, it was almost like a Steamboat Savage WrestleMania 3-esque type cradle that he pins him with. So yeah, really fun match. Continues to feud. You want to see Savage still get like his ultimate revenge on Honky Tonk Man and kind of extinguish the Hart Foundation for good.
It was a nice break too after all the fucking honky Savage matches we've had to see. Like it was nice to see like the feud kind of continues. We get the Jimmy Hart stuff, but it's at least you know, it's Brett. It's just something fresh. Like Savage and Honky is a sweet. We needed a break from that.
Yeah, I give it 3.5 as well. And I think we can start to say, I think, a little bit that this was about the time, even this early on, 1987, that the company realized that Brett, down the line, was going to be a bankable solo star. You're not going to put Anvil in this spot. The match would have been garbage. Or maybe it would have been like maybe 2 stars, mostly because of Savage. They weren't stupid. They knew Brett was the better match. And I think that's because they knew down the line Brett was going to be a solo star. Great storytelling. I always loved this match, just the whole selling of the foot and actually taking the boot off and, like, you know, rubbing his ankle. It was real. I mean, it was very, very good storytelling. And Honky not being there actually made it even more frustrating in the storyline for Savage that, you know, you got to bring these, you know, your minions. I can't get you. But you're right, JR. It's good to have a change of pace here and have a different kind of match. A different kind of opponent. And I like that, you know, Savage is slowly, I mean, we've come down to the realization that Savage is a babyface star, and something is obviously in play for him when we turn to, 1988. So, I think that Savage is set for big things, even though we see, you know, the real big guy later on. I think it's a good spot for Savage. He looks awesome again. So over. Seattle crowd loved him. But a good storytelling for Brett and a good stage for him. Really his first big time solo stage nationally. Just a win all around. A win all around for everybody. Coming off that stinker that opened the show. We needed something to kind of fire guys up. Fire the fans up. And this was it. This was it. So kudos to everybody. Brett, Savage, even Elizabeth. Even Jimmy, you know, everybody was on tonight in this whole segment. Everybody was on, so it kept the storyline going. So big match. Well, why don't we take a break? Mm-hmm. We're halfway through. Calm you gentlemen down. I guess you could say it's 50-50, JR. Yeah. shit one hand and gold in the other.
Yeah, it was quite the dichotomy. I mean, at least Davis Steele was short. Like, I'll give it that. They buzz through it. To me, that's a match you throw at the end of the show, right? Instead of like the opening. That's all. I probably would have stuck that in the 12:30 hour or whatever time it was, where they would usually bury the shit match at the end of the show. That's what they should have done with that thing.
Yeah, I would have put what we had last first. I think that would have been an even better opener. Yeah, pretty good so far, Chad. Like I said, 50-50. I don't know. In your eyes, Steel Davis was, you know.
Come on.
4.5.
Listen, when you review MSG shows, you value that half star match. It
yes,
has to be like
do.
Decent to get that half star rating. If you start throwing that around, you'll be all over the place with these MSGs we're stuck watching.
Anyway, we'll take a break. When we come back, we are halfway through. 2 matches left, including our World Wrestling Federation champion will be with us and putting his title on the line against an old opponent. And JR's boy shows up at the end for a big nationally televised match. But first, let's take a break. Because
sit down. 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 Sit down.
bitch, sit down. Be humble, sit down. Be humble, sit down.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the Pro Wrestling Only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com, and we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, and NWA Classics On Demand Adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others available on PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh ebooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
All right, Nation, we're back taking a look at the November 87 Saturday night's main event. And, you know, Scott, I sit here sometimes and think I'm just done with this fucking show. I'm done with you. But then I really reminisce and I'm like, you know what? I'm not ready to quit because I really just had the time of my life doing this podcast. And I'm not ready to be done. I'm going to keep going. And then I'll probably tomorrow think I'm done. But it's okay. We're gonna trudge along. But speaking of having the time of your life, of course, that is the hit song from the movie Dirty Dancing. you're hearing it playing underneath us here tonight, and that only means one thing. It is the Pop Culture Corner with Scott Criscolo.
Thank you, JR. And yes, a new, we didn't do one last episode because, again, we've had like a billion shows this week alone. But today, on this Saturday, November 28th, 1987, a new Billboard Top 100 came out, and this was number one. I've Had the Time of My Life. Bill Medley and Jennifer Warnes, the big track from Dirty Dancing. JR, if you want to run, I'll catch you if you'd like.
We already did that in the Christmas episode 2 years ago.
All right, well, then you should feel fine now. There should be no doubt.
Scott's got hungry eyes.
Yes. That's right. Hit me phone. Hey. All right, number two.
Chocolate chip
Linda
cookies
Carlisle.
Between you and I. Hungry eyes.
Number two, Belinda Carlisle, because heaven is a place on earth. Mm-hmm. Billie Eilish at number three with Moni Moni. Little Richard Marx at number four, Shoulda Known Better. George Michael with Faith at number five. Brilliant Disguise, Bruce Springsteen at six. Little Tiffany, our girl Tiffany, with I Think We're Alone Now at seven. We'll Be Together by Sting at eight. I've Been in Love Before by Cutting Crew at nine.
Been in love before.
And then Shake Your Love, Chad Campbell, by Debbie Gibson.
Shake Your Love.
Great song. So there you go. There's your top ten. And the Dirty Dancing song is number one. Two movies, JR, and actually both pretty well-known comedies of the decade of the 80s. Probably two of your favorites, I think. This first comedy...
Suburban Commando.
No. That was not well, it depends on your point of view, I guess.
Of course it was a comedy.
Yes, I know. 49.5 million at the box office. One of the more well-known movies by both of these guys. And, of course, one of them, sadly, no longer with us. The movie is Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Oh, wow. God, I didn't realize, by the way, John Candy, like how young he was. When I was watching Cool Runnings, and then I saw something, but I think it was made on Twitter, like it was the anniversary of his death or something the other day. Yeah, he passed away March 4th, 94, at only 43. Crazy to think of.
I can't believe last year was 20 years of Chris Farley. Mm. That's even crazier.
And what would you consider Suburban Commando if you don't think it's a comedy?
Well, I mean, it was a comedy. I don't know. It was a comedy, but not like this level of comedy. Like, this is like...
Well, it was just a shitty comedy.
It was a shitty comedy.
I mean, there was a comedic movie.
Comedic movie, yeah.
It just failed in its mission.
Yeah.
Neil Page is an advertising executive on a business trip to New York City trying to return to his family in Chicago for Thanksgiving. After a meeting ends without a decision, Neil attempts to hail a cab. Del Griffith, the traveling salesman who sells shower curtain rings, has unknowingly taken a taxi that Neil bought from an attorney. The two meet again at LaGuardia Airport, where they board a plane to O'Hare. The plane is diverted to Wichita due to a blizzard in Chicago, and of course the hijinks are on from there. Starring Steve Martin, John Candy, Layla Robbins, Michael McKean, Kevin Bacon, Dylan Baker, Larry Henkin, Edie McClurg, Ben Stein, Charles Steiner. Diana Dill is Peg. She will come back to you.
Which will come back to you. Yeah. Pretty good little cast there.
Yeah, not bad. Of course, produced and directed by John Hughes.
John Hughes, yes.
And he would later, of course, manage Lex Luger, or bodyguard for Lex Luger.
That's right. Yes. All right, and the other big movie that came out this weekend, another great comedy, made a lot more money than Planes, Trains, and Automobiles did. $167 million.
Good gosh.
$780,000. Big comedy here. Actually, it had one of JR's favorite actors in it from one of
Hulk
his
Hogan.
Favorite
Suburban Commando.
No. Well, from one of his oh, terrible drama. No. No, another one of your favorite guys from one of your favorite movie series.
Harry Potter.
No, well before Harry Potter. The guy is your boy there, Mahoney. Mr. Steve Guttenberg.
Look who's talking.
The movie is?
Three Men and a Baby.
Yep.
Oh, he's not this is one talking, of, is he? I was thinking 3 Men and a Baby. He's not, is he? No, he's not Luke who's talking, is he? Who's in that? Kirstie Alley, right? Oh, is it Travolta?
Travolta.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Travolta.
I was thinking 3 Men and a Baby when I said it. Architect Peter Mitchell, cartoonist Michael Kellum, and actor John Jack Holden are happily living their lives as bachelors in their lofty New York City apartment, where they have frequent parties and flings with different women. Their lives are disrupted, though, when a baby named Mary arrives on the doorstep one day. A note with her, written by a lady named Sylvia, indicates that she is Jack's, the result of a tryst between the actor and actress when they were both in Shakespeare in the Park with Aaron George. Mary arrives in his absence. He is in Turkey shooting a B-movie, leaving Peter and Michael to fend for themselves. Prior to leaving, Jack had made arrangements with a director friend to have a package delivered to the apartment as a favor. Before Mary's arrival, he calls and leaves a message to Peter and Michael, informing them of the package and to keep it secret. When she arrives, they mistakenly believe that she is the package, even though there is a note from the mother. Of course, starring Tom Selleck, Steve Guttenberg, Ted Danson, Nancy Travis, just someone named Michelle. And oh, Michelle and Lisa Blair is Mary. Sorry, fucked that up. They were twins. Paul Guilfoyle. Anyone else? That's about it as far as name. Oh, Colin Quinn. There you go. He's got a cameo in there.
There you go.
That's about it. No one else name, really.
Okay. There you go.
Yeah. This is one of my top two guilty pleasure movies that if it's on, I watch it no matter where it's at. The other one, a little fun fact, You've Got Mail.
Which is the internet version of Sleepless in Seattle, pretty much.
Yes.
Sleepless in Seattle with a computer.
Awful.
Yeah, good movie. And, of course, 300 and a Baby always has that infamous scene where they think there's like a ghost kid standing in the window behind the curtain there. But they said it was a stand-up or so. It was like a cardboard cutout or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
But for years, they thought it was a kid who died in the house they were shooting in, and he was the ghost. That was a big, big thing.
Budget, by the way, was $16 million, and they made $170 million, so not bad.
Not bad at all, back when actors didn't cost that much.
Tom Selleck.
We will hold off on football because we're in the midst of a week, but on our next episode, JR, will be the final week of the 1987 season, so Mr. Nelson can try and usurp you in the standings. He gets
Nelson
one more crack.
Himself.
That is on our next show, when we do the December MSG House show. He will get his last chance because that'll be week 16 of the 1987 NFL season.
He's got no chance.
No chance. Eight games in the NBA on this Saturday evening. The and another one of your favorites, JR, as a child, the round mound of rebound. Charles Barkley had 37 points and 16 rebounds for the Sixers, but they lost in overtime to the Kings, 115 to 114.
Looking at him right now on my wall.
There he is. That was the highlight of that evening in the NBA. Mm-hmm. And in the NHL, there were, as we're waiting for the page, eight games on the frozen pond. A lot of our PTB teams in action. Our Bruins, JR, losing to the Red Wings 3-2 in overtime. Whalers beat the Maple Leafs 4-2. Kelly's Flames beat the Kings 8-4. Mr. D'Amato's Rangers lost 5-4 to the Islanders.
Yes.
Did you have any team, Chad, before the Thrashers?
No.
No? All right, then you have nobody here.
Do you have
right,
a team so after go. The Thrashers?
Yeah. Do you have, yeah. All right. And there's actually a birthday, JR, not a death. Yeah. I think the girls from Geek and Sassy will probably appreciate this one. For on this date, November 28th, 1987, a certain actress, a Scottish actress, was born.
Becky Lynch.
She is 30. No, not Becky Lynch. About the same age, though, probably. Well, no, she's probably younger. She was Amy Pond in Doctor Who. She is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and she is in the new Jumanji.
The Rock.
Karen Gillan.
Who?
No, nothing. It's Jack Black. No, Karen Gillan turned 30. She was born on this date, November 28th, 1987. So, there
did you see Jack Black sing the national anthem at that game?
No.
He was making the rounds. He was one of the best renditions of all time.
Great.
Pretty interesting. Yeah, check it out.
That's awesome.
May he deserve to be in School of Rock, after all.
Oh, tremendous movie. That's a guilty pleasure movie for me, Chad, School of Rock.
Yeah. Georgia beat Georgia Tech on this day, too. So, suck
in
it,
what?
Angie.
Hockey?
Clean old-fashioned hate.
The only sport that counts.
Clean old-fashioned hate. Back in the late 80s, Chad, when the SEC nobody gave a shit about because it was all about the when Alabama was average and Georgia was average. Was Vince Dooley still the head coach in the 80s?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, they went 9-3 this year, right?
Yeah.
Pretty good. But
But Bama was Gene Stallings, I think, was their coach, I think, at that time, right?
Yeah.
They didn't get bad until the 90s. The number one team in the country was –
imagine caring about college football.
Oh, wow.
Nebraska was number one this weekend, Chad, and they lost to number two Oklahoma. Of course, Miami would end up winning the national championship. And that is your pop culture corner. So let's go back to Seattle, Jared.
All right, we're back in Seattle, home of Van Burton, and that's where Mean Gene is with King Kong Bundy and Bobby Heenan. Bobby tells Gene to shut up, says Hulkamania will die tonight and Bundamania will be born. Bobby laughs off Hogan's fans, says he has a big, huge surprise tonight. Gene talks to Hulk Hogan and does his usual thing. Hogan, and that is our next match, and that is Hulk Hogan defending the WWF World Heavyweight title against King Kong Bundy. Bundy and Heenan stalk to the ring to booze. Bobby reveals his big surprise, and that is Andre the Giant will be in Bundy's corner. Andre looks fantastic as he struts out in his killer suit, booze just raining down upon him. The crowd then erupts for Hulk Hogan, and Jesse talks about Bobby's mind games. Jesse bitches about Joey Morella always being the ref for Hogan once again. We open with a stare down and some shoving until Hulk grabs a side headlock and punches away. Hulk tries for a slam, but Bundy falls back on him for two. Bundy goes right back at the back and leans his weight into it, clubbing away. The crowd tries to rally the champ as Bundy stands on his back. Hogan rolls outside and gets caught as he heads back in, with Bundy using his power. Hogan catches Bundy with a clothesline, drops a flurry of elbows for two, and then punches away. Bundy comes back to club to the back and clothesline, and then drops a knee for two before going to a chin lock. Hogan eventually powers out and hits a big boot, but gets tripped up by Andre, apparently drawing a DQ. Hogan dodges a Bundy attack as Andre pulls off his suit jacket, but Fink announces that if Andre doesn't leave, Hogan will win the match. So it looks like the DQ didn't actually happen. Vince says Morella is a fair ref, giving Bundy every chance in this one. Bundy and Bobby beg Andre to leave, which he finally does, kicking a cameraman on the way out. After the break, Andre's gone and Bundy's working over Hulk's back. Hogan fights him off and runs him from corner to corner before laying in some chops. Bundy dodges an elbow, goes right back to dominating with his power and weight, goes to a bear hug. Hogan hangs on and breaks free, but Bundy cuts him down with a back elbow. Bundy follows with an avalanche, a big splash, but Hogan blows out of the cover, unloaded with a flurry and slam Bundy. Bundy rolls outside and yanks Hogan out with him, and the two trade blows as Bundy rolls back in. Heenan comes out and holds Hogan's leg, keeping him outside for the count out. Jesse's shocked that Joey Morella is actually calling it fair. Hogan beats on Heenan after the announcement, and even that felt like a bit much. This is a fun power match, as these two have some strong chemistry. Bundy looked really good, working his game plan, punishing the back. And the Andre stuff was great, too, just adding so much heat to his issue with Hogan, making him look like a badass prick. Good match. Bundy can still go, even at this point in his run. I went 2.5, Scott.
I thought this match was a lot of fun. I gave it 2.5 as well. Bundy, Bundy, I was kind of throwing dirt on him a little earlier than I should have. Bundy's one of those guys, and I've watched a lot of Bundy stuff on the network when he was in World Class and all over the place. And the guy, you know, for somebody who had that kind of size, he really knew how to bump well. He knew how to take advantage of his size but be quick at the same time. A very serviceable guy anywhere he ever was. And when it's evident, obviously, that, you know, there's other bigger guys in the company, and he's, honestly, I don't know how to word it. He's probably in a better place than Orndorff is at this point. But still, you get the feeling that Bundy's kind of feeling dated. Yet, here he is in a big spot here and actually looks pretty good. And obviously, this is all about Hogan and Andre, and like almost like Bundy was in the way. But you made a good point, JR, on our written review of this show, which you can see at placemenation.com. You had said that it was pretty much becoming Hogan versus the Heenan family. And that's pretty much what it is. It's been Hogan and Bobby pretty much locked together for almost the last almost two full years.
Yeah.
And that's what this is. You know? And it's looked great. And it's been fantastic. It's led to great television, great wrestling, great everything. So kudos to putting this together. It's two. We're back to back now with A pluses in terms of storytelling and such, because obviously the two big things right now that we're seeing in the company, Hogan Andre is being ramped up again after kind of being cool throughout the summer. And obviously the evolution of the Macho Man as a bona fide stud in this company. Mm-hmm. And that's what this was about. This was like a taste of what we were going to see in 1988, Chad. Is that this is what we were going to see. Hogan Andre reaching its, you know, its apex again after everyone thought it was done, and then just the evolution of Savage. But here, Hogan and Bundy put on a pretty solid match. Andre's just so menacing. Everything worked.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went 3 stars actually on this. I thought it was really fun. I thought Bundy as the gatekeeper type role has been really effective, both last Saturday night's main event and this one. What you talked about, Scott, I think is true in that he can be pretty quick and move around really well, but also look menacing too when he needs to be. So he's pretty versatile in that regard as a big guy. One thing I wanted to mention, I sent you guys a screen cap of it earlier today, is Hogan's bandana is like shredded in the front. I don't know. It looks like braids or like Hogan's trying to be a Rasta man. It was awful. I thought
it was weird.
It was like one step away from the fist helmet or whatever.
It looks like those old like 70s lampshades that have the things like
that. It was very weird. I didn't quite get it, and I don't remember him having that look again. So thankfully, somebody kind of told him that looked ridiculous, and he moved on. But as far as the match, I thought the restart was smartly done. I really liked showing the Heenan family together where, you know, like Bobby was talking to Andre and saying, like, this is Bundy's match. This is his shot. So, you know, just go away.
Yeah, that begging him to leave.
We can take care of it.
Yeah, that begging him to leave was great. It was like, because they know he's, like, unhinged and he can do what he wants. And they're just, like, pleading with him just to leave. Like, they have no control over what he does. So I thought that was well done. And Andre's presence as a heel has just gotten so good. Like, Survivor Series here. He just feels like such a monster. Like it's almost like at WrestleMania 3, he was just kind of coerced into like going against Hogan and being a heel with Bobby because he was just angry. And now it's like he's bought in. Like he's just pissed and like just become like a douche. Like the transition since he's back from the back injury is just really well done. Like just from a guy who was kind of manipulated against his friend to someone who's now fully bought into the plan. And it's just like, just become just an asshole, just a grumpy piece of shit. Like that's what Andre looks like. And honestly, after the back injury, he probably really was just a grumpy piece of shit.
Yeah.
But it just plays it off real well. I guess it looks really cool. But I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, the camera, like when he attacks the cameraman, that puts that over well too, because that's a great shot because it stays on the cameraman, like getting harassed by Andre. I did notice Andre was sweating pretty profusely during through his shirt, which was humorous. You can actually see his nipples coming through the shirt, which was entertaining. but the finish too is well done. I mean, you just didn't see. I mean, yes, a cheap finish, but it's one that prolongs the feud and the issue of Hogan versus the Heenan family, and now you can say, well, the Heenan family has a win against Hogan. You just saw it at Survivor Series. Now you see it here, where this is kind of 2 countouts for Hogan in 2 days, and there's just enough kind of chinks in the armor that makes, like, Heenan and Andre as a package and even Bundy look really credible that, you know, I mean, Andre looks like a monster. Heenan may be getting into Hogan's head a little bit. And Bundy is also a powerful force too. So this storytelling overall from the lead up to WrestleMania 3 to when we get to the main event coming up, I think is really inspired storytelling, and I've really enjoyed kind of following it through these vaults when they touched on it, because Hogan and Andre have not like crossed paths that much. But when they have, it's been heavily emphasized, and it's been just like just enough to get you to like to grip you to where you want to see the next chapter. It's really well done.
You mentioned Chink in the Armor. Do you remember that ESPN writer that got fired because he wrote an article about Jeremy Lin called Chink and he titled it Chink in the Armor?
Yes.
You remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Awful.
Yeah, I do remember that too. like Robert Lee, Asian Robert Lee, he couldn't announce games or something.
Oh yeah, that whole fiasco.
That was good too. That was a good one.
No, those are really good points, and yeah, I think they've really done a nice job of keeping Hogan and Andre apart, but keeping them together obviously the back injury forced them into it. But even since the return, like, they touched a Survivor Series, but not a ton. And now, you know, you got this going on with Bundy back in the mix. And even though he's long past being a foil for Hogan, he's still so believable. And I think it's fitting. Like, he's, you know, he gets another shot, obviously, after the count out win. But it's, you know, he's nearing his time. So it was cool to see him bounce back. Because I think a lot of people just think, like, oh, he was in the midget thing at three and he fell off a cliff, right? Like, you almost forget about this little kind of bump lady gets back into the main event picture. So I thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about this.
Yeah.
Until I rewatched it.
All right, we go backstage. Gene Mean is with Hercules and says, Bobby's injured. He won't be at ringside tonight after what just happened. Herc says the family are all looked at as henchmen and assassins, but Hogan is always an angel. It's bullshit. He'll squeeze out Bam Bam Bigelow with a full Nelson tonight. Gene is then with Bigelow and Sir Oliver Humperdinck, and they talk about arriving at the big time and say they'll take care of Herc tonight. Oliver talks trash on Bobby as well. I have a note here, too, that Bigelow is actually replacing Jim Duggan, so I'm not sure if Duggan was hurt or if that's legit or not, but that's they never mentioned that on here, right? I don't think so. We must have saw it somewhere, Scott, when we did.
No, I don't remember it. I don't remember that either. And maybe it's in the let me see if Graham has it.
Okay. Look that up while we get to our final match of the evening. That is Bam Bam Bigelow, Scotty Charles, taking on Hercules. Herc saunters out for this interesting power match, followed by Bammer and Hump out to their sax music and cheers. Jesse can't decide if Bammer's or Hump is uglier. We open with a stare down and some posturing as they trade some power blows until Herc lands a knee and starts to club away. Herc dumps Bammer over the top to the floor in a very hard bump and then continues to work the big man as he gets back on the apron. Things spill back to the floor where the two hosses traded wild right hands. As the Seahawks looked on at ringside, Bigelow slams Herc on the floor, but both were countered out, ending the match before it even gets going. Bigelow demands Herc come back in and restart the match. After the break, he does just that. We reset things and get some more feeling out before the two collide with a big football charge that rattles both guys. They line up again, and this time Herc drops down, but Bammer cartwheels over him and hammers away. Herc dodges a dropkick and then drops a pair of hard elbows and a leaping knee drop as Jesse rips him for wasting time. Herc slowly goes up top and leaps off, but Bigelow catches him on his shoulders and press slams him in a really cool spot. Bigelow follows with a slingshot splash for the win. Quality victory for Bigelow. He looks great in there, just wrecking shit. Herc wrestled dumb, and Jesse calls it out, and Bigelow makes him pay and gets a big pop for it. This is a pretty good power war showcase. Even could add a couple more minutes. And I agree with you, Scott. I think this should have been the opener. Just two guys just beating the piss out of each other and let Steele and Davis close out the show. I want a star and a half on this, Chad.
Star and a half for me as well. Yeah, I enjoyed this. I thought I thought Bam Bam still looked like a definitely guy on the rise to fill out that kind of, you know, you got your Hogan, you got Savage as your top two baby faces, but he could slot in as your number three. He certainly looked like the type of person that could here. And he certainly, he's not definitely not the same type of character as like somebody like George Steele, but as far as like an attraction type character, you know, unique look, stuff like that. Like I think it's a clear upgrade as far as athletic ability, obviously, and wrestling acumen to have somebody like Bam Bam. One thing I didn't like in this match was the restart, because we just saw that kind of the fake out finish.
Yeah,
we just saw that in the previous match. So they went to that well again in this match, which was a little unfortunate, but yeah, I mean, overall, that power slam looked awesome because, I mean, Herc is not the smallest guy and obviously is enhanced as well. Yeah. So for Bam Bam to catch him, it looked really fluid, and then he slingshots himself in. So, yeah, I mean, a good showcase for Bam Bam.
Yeah, Bigelow, too. I mean, you always kind of heard it like, oh, he could have been a star. I looked like a star. But, like, watching the in-between stuff, like, not just, all right, look great at Survivor Series, and then all of a sudden he's at WrestleMania. He's not, like, watching the MSG stuff, like that big fight he had with Bundy Scott that we watched a few weeks back, that was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And then this match, too. Like, he really was working his ass off. And you know how I feel about Hercules. Like, he's, I think he's kind of been one of the unsung heroes for 86 and 87, as far as TV worker goes. So this was, like, I was into this one. I really liked it. I thought they really beat the crap out of each other. But you're right, Chad. I thought that power slam was awesome. And I like the slingshot splash. So it was a good match.
I like the slingshot splash, too. I agree. Star and a half for me. Bigelow definitely was also feeling like a guy who could have been destined for big things. Crowd was into him. You know, the unique look and you know, Herc, obviously Herc's run as a heel maybe coming to an end. But if this opened the show, it would have been one of the best Science Man. I feel like that the show had to pick up at the end, on the back end, because that opener was so abysmal. I would have definitely put this in the front. But Bigelow, like Bundy, another guy who can utilize his size, mm-hmm. but really will go out there and put that extra something in instead of kind of being a lumbering, you know, oaf. And I feel like, JR, that and we'll probably get into this when we do our, like, you know, end of year stuff. A lot of guys that I had remembered being kind of slothy, now watching them even more in depth, really worked harder than I remember them working. And Bundy was one. Bigelow was one. Morocco was another one. It seemed like working boots were definitely in order,
yeah.
at least the last, like, 6 months of the company right now. Everybody seems to be just working really hard. I think the financial boon of WrestleMania 3, really, the company was feeling good right now about itself.
So well, I think too, there's a lot of openings, like, on the card. Like, now that Jake is back, that's a spot that's gone. But if you look at, like, the fall, like, Jake was out with the suspension pretty much. Steamboat was in and out with the kid. Andre's done heaven surgery. So, like, at the top of the card, it's really Hogan, Savage, and Honky. You know what I mean? Like who else is there? So
yeah.
I think a lot of these guys saw openings. And I think we also started to see guys getting pushed out the door, new talent coming in, so others are stepping up, and like there's a real this refreshing of the roster, and I think it boosted some of these guys that have been around all of a sudden have a shot maybe to elevate a bit with the flux on the card.
Yeah, and they just worked really hard, and I think the company's in good shape. Everybody's feeling good about themselves as we head into a new year. And I think two guys in particular, Bundy and Bigelow, are perfect examples on this show of guys that are just working to keep spots and working to earn their pay. And I think that the only people that succeed or that are rewarded are the fans, because we're just watching good stuff that we had thought was kind of dreck, and it really hasn't been. Mm-hmm. And the three guys I could think of, Bundy, Bigelow, and not he's not on this show, but we've talked about it on MSG, JR, is Morocco, who I thought once he kind of, you know, went to CVS and got your inhaler, that he started to become a dreg, but he really didn't, actually.
No, we talked about it. I think the face roll is actually better for him because his selling is pretty good, and he doesn't have to meander through offense. So, but we'll see more of him.
Yep, exactly.
A note, so, buddy.
Good match.
A note by our buddy Peter Winston, by the way. You know, I referenced during the match that the Seahawks were ringside. He said, obviously, Brian Bosworth was part of the group that was there. And then the following Monday was the game where Bo Jackson and the Raiders owned his ass.
Trucked him.
Yeah, so.
Oh, yeah, he trucked him. Yeah, he ate his lunch.
Yeah, yep. So there you go.
Speaking of Peter, he had a big game, exciting game tonight. The Bruins won in the last 18 seconds.
Yeah.
Exciting.
I'm sure he's glad he went. He said if they were playing a crappy opponent, he would have passed up and stayed home and recorded the show. But, sorry, we got Chad. We're better off anyway. All right, so Gene is backstage with Bundy and Andre. Bundy says Bobby will be back and gloats about his victory over Hogan and said he's going to demand a rematch for the title, and we'll have Andre in his corner that time. Jesse shows up and congratulates Bundy on the win and says he's the champion of the world, and with Andre in his corner next time he will win. I love how Jesse, like, runs to the back from the commentary booth, like, to go celebrate. Anything to shit on Hogan, he's in for. Like, he's I had to come celebrate. Gene is in with Hogan, who says Bundy's win was shallow, and he wants to rematch, too, so he can prove a point, and he hopes Andre's in his corner, and he'll get a dose of Hulkamania, too. So that wraps up the show. We can get to awards in a moment, but, Chad, any final thoughts as a whole?
I did like at the very end, Mean Gene had, like, a line at Bobby where they were – I think Vince asked him about his condition, and he was like, who cares, or something like that. That was pretty funny. Like a pot shot at Bobby on the way out. But, yeah, I mean, I thought this was a good show as we get into our awards.
Yeah. Scott?
Yeah, top to bottom, really good. And,
it was,
by the
it was
way –
quick one,
Yeah, it did go very, very fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did go very fast. And Graham does have that Bigelow was subbing for Duggan.
Okay.
So that's obviously where we got it. So
upgrade.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
All right.
Good show.
All right.
Top to bottom.
Let's get to our awards. Yep. Our match of the night here tonight, I thought, was a pretty simple choice, and that is Savage versus Bret Hart.
Agreed.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. The Cousin Junior, also a easy choice, and that is George Steele and his half-star match against Danny Davis.
Agreed.
All right.
Yes.
All right, our Hogan Award, that is the MVP of the evening, I went with Savage. I thought he was phenomenal in his match. I thought the selling of the ankle and the foot was great, and I really enjoyed it.
I will go with that, but I will give an honorable mention to Andre for just being so great in just the role of, like, the stalking, you know, just the presence during that match with Hogan Bundy. But I'll go with Savage.
Yeah, those are my the two I was in between two on my notes. But yeah, I mean, Savage's selling was really good. I mean, I don't think you really see I couldn't remember many instances of Savage selling a limb like that.
Yeah.
Like, typically don't
it's his knee usually.
Think of him. Yeah,
right.
It's like a big kind of ankle or something like that seller. So it was unique.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, worst work of the night. I thought George Steele was clearly it, even though Davis is dog shit too. I Steele's just cooked. Like, he's just got nothing. I mean, just absolutely.
Yeah,
nothing.
He sucks.
Yeah,
nice deal.
All right, best moment of the night. I went with Andre refusing to leave. Like, I thought this, that put him over as such a just a bastard and a dick, and like just Bobby and Bundy. It's almost like fear in their eyes. Like, they know they can't control this monster, and they're just hoping he'll go away so they can have the match. Like, I thought that did so much for Andre as a character. I that was my favorite part of the night.
Me too. And the, he's shoving the camera guy down. And,
yeah, he kicks him down and everything.
Yeah, no, it was tremendous. He was fantastic. I agree.
Yeah, that was really shoving the camera guy down. I just thought that was such a great angle. And I love that they kept the one shot on the camera guy being harassed. It gives the realistic kind of vibe to it, and the camera's a little out of focus and shaking as he's taking the bump or whatever.
Yep.
So that really worked in putting over Andre as an uncontrollable monster.
All right, and our newly christened Morocco Award for the most juiced up. Of course, Donnie Boy was not on the show tonight, so he can't win. He's won a bunch lately, though, enough to get the award named after him. But I went with Hercules here. I think, you know, Hogan's always in contention, but I always feel weird choosing him for some reason. It's almost like too easy. But Herc is just like wicked juice too.
I thought Bundy was pretty buff. No, I'm only kidding.
Steel.
Yeah, fat, yeah, buffed in another way.
He's on the caliber scale, yes.
Yes. caliber scale. yeah, I'll go with I'll go with Herc. Definitely. He's like really the only one if you think about it.
I went Hogan. I mean, even in his promo, he was talking about you could see the blue veins or whatever ripping out. So he was pretty much admitting that he just cycled on some juice right before the show. So I went with him.
All right. Let's go for our final grade before we wrap things up. I went with a 6 out of 10. I feel like it was a pretty solid Saturday's main event. Not that one of the best we've seen. But two pretty good matches, one shaky and then one decent, but no, like, I don't know. I was going to say nothing huge happened, but I guess the Andre stuff was kind of big, maybe a tick lower than I could have been, but that 6 felt about right for this one, Chad.
I went 6.5, just because, I mean, it was an hour really quick. I mean, the one match that's bad is about 5 minutes. So it's an hour and 6 minutes on the network, so you take out the 5 minutes of crap. You got an hour of two good matches in my eyes, one really good match, one good match, and one good showcase for Bam Bam. So I enjoyed this. I agree that nothing, like, monumental really happens on this show. You could probably skip ahead, and you wouldn't be too far lost storyline-wise, but it was a good kind of bridge and continuity from where they were going angle-wise heading into 1988 and WrestleMania 4 down the road. I thought this did a really good job.
Scott?
Now, we gave the one that we did in October, I gave a 7.5, and that one was really good. This one was good, not as good as that one, so I'm going to go with you, JR. I'm going to give it a 6. Just good storytelling, good use of Andre. Trying to use him. I think the best part about Andre is you're using him sparingly without really having to use him, you know, and use whatever bullets he's got left, which isn't many.
No, the save of the world terror for sure.
And Bundy looked good. Bigelow looked good. Savage looked good. Yeah, it's like not as good as the show in October with the Savage honky, but just as good. So 6 for me.
All right, that'll do it here tonight. So, Scott, we will be back Monday night. That's our plan as of now. Oh, we're going to wrap up 1987 already. It feels like we just started.
I know.
It's been an interesting year. It took us, let's see, when did we start? October 2nd we started 87, so yep. 5 months or so. But here we go. We're going to wrap it up with the December 87 MSG House Show. Our buddy Pete Schermacher from, what's he doing now, WorldCast, and then This Week in Wrestling, yes. And of course, formerly yep. of Titans of Wrestling. He will be joining us. Always a good time to have Pete. And I feel like we always give him these shit December shows, so we'll see. We'll see if this one's any better than the
I know.
last year,
I know, right?
That he had. But it's always good to have Pete here. Hopefully yes. we can keep him awake, and we'll keep him going through that one. Chad, anything you want to plug or anything you got going on?
Nothing, I don't think, right offhand. We will have a WrestleMania written series coming up, so be on the lookout for that mm-hmm. on the website.
Yeah, of course, we're wrapping up the Greatest Duty Wrestler Project. Top 10 is all that remains, and that should be up in the next day or so as you hear this. And then we will put that to bed. It's been a lot of fun, a lot of work since May. You know, it's funny, I was thinking back, Chad, as we were wrapping up to the night I told you about this idea. I was cutting the grass at my mother-in-law's. And I don't know what made it pop in my head. I don't know if I was listening to an old GWE podcast. Something popped in my head. And I sent you the text, and you were like, instantly were like, that's interesting, because it won't be Ric Flair. And I'm like, that was it. That's all I needed. was your indirect approval, and we launched it like that night.
Yeah, I know it was some podcast. I can't remember either. I'll have to dig up the chat.
Yeah, I was listening to something as I was cutting the grass, and I'm like, yeah, it'd be interesting if we did this. And that's where it all came up. So it's been a fun, whatever, almost a year. A lot of writing, a lot of work, but it was worth it. It was a lot of great engagement. So check that out. And, of course, the audio is going to continue to drop. Aaron and I just did another Made the Cut. Chad and Andy, they did a four-hour extravaganza breaking down their lists. Peter Winston and Steve Bennett did a really good one. We just have more and more stuff hitting the airwaves. And Aaron and I still have a ways to go on ours too. We're only in the whatever, I don't even know where we are. 70s or something.
No, y'all finished in the 60s.
50s. Yeah,
okay.
Oh, 50s. All right, even better. Great.
Yeah.
So more of that should be coming soon. So be sure to check out that. And I know Scott, you and Nate obviously are doing your Main Event supplement series, breaking down your lists. Mm-hmm. You want to give us an update where you stand with Main Event in general and then that as well?
Yes, actually dropping this weekend will be part 3 of Nate's and my series. We are going by tens, so the next episode will be numbers 80 to 71. Okay. So those 10 wrestlers. As for Main Event next week, Chadley will be joining us, as well as myself, Nate. Steve Willey, I think, will be joining us as well. We'll obviously recap this weekend's Fastlane pay-per-view on Sunday night. And it is our next, actually Chad picked it, our next New Japan Classic Match Pick series. And Chad picked this next match. So that'll be next week. So looking forward to it.
All right. Very good. Very good. All right. Until then, and then we will disqualify after we get by Monday. We'll talk about this more Monday night. Our schedule is going to be a little chaotic due to travel and work stuff and whatnot. And then WrestleMania is in there too. So after Monday, you may not hear from us for a few weeks. But we'll talk about that as we get closer on Monday night. And then we have maybe an idea of where we stand. But until then, be sure to visit PlaceBNation.com each and every day, Facebook.com/PlaceBNation, Twitter, number two, PlaceBNation, Instagram, Tumblr, shop with us, PlaceBNation.com/Amazon. Check out our free Vintage Vault Refresh ebook series. You can click the picture on the right-hand side of the website and download those for free. And support us any way you can.
Yes.
For Chadwick, that's Scotland. I'm Justin. We're out. We'll talk to you on Monday night. Everyone take care. Have a good weekend. And may CVS not haunt your dreams.
It's a lot of inhalers.
Was that supposed to be like, I don't know if that was like big pun, 06, that big breath before he raps. In the middle, all right, we're out.